Hollywood is based on fear. It's fear of getting older, fear of not getting the next great script, fear of a younger, better-looking person coming in the ranks behind you, fear of box office failure. And so you add in the woke mindset, it ramps it up by 10, and then you don't want to rock the boat, and you don't want to have different opinions, you want to have the same opinions. And it's creating this really stultifying atmosphere, which is no good for anything. I mean, I'll watch Captain America Civil War 1,000 times, and I'll watch the Infinity War movie 1,000 times. In the last 8 MCU movies, I've seen them once. I have no interest in seeing them again. But they're woke and they're diverse. Good. Who cares?
Hello and welcome to Culturescape, the show that interviews the geek creators and influencers that built nerd culture. Today we are talking about the mass entertainment news media, especially but not limited to conservative media. One of the strangest parallels of our time is the culture war, a rabid and vicious fight between the two majority Western cultures, with the everything must change progressives on one side and the traditionalist conservatives that would prefer nothing to. What makes this dynamic ever the more strange is that for all the talk about the importance of winning this culture war, both sides, but especially conservatives, do very little to nothing at all to impact the culture. In a fairly profound piece, journalist and film critic Christian Toto wrote, "Conservatives can't fight culture wars without doing this first." Toto notes that those influenced in media talk the talk about culture, but rarely walk the walk. Welcome to the show, Christian. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Quick introduction to people who are not familiar with your work, especially if they're conservative and they've read any media criticism or culture, they probably have read your stuff, but just in case, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I got into movie coverage because I loved movies back in the day, and what I didn't realize, I would become, in a way, an accidental culture warrior myself, and I cover movies from a right-of-center perspective, and that may sound weird to the uninitiated, but basically the vast majority of Hollywood journalists and film critics are left of center, and it shows in their work. So I do it from a different perspective. I think half the country deserves a critic to speak for them. And by doing so, I don't want to be predictable. I don't want to say, well, that's a conservative movie and thus it's good, or it's a liberal movie and therefore it's bad. So I try to judge art on its merits, but I'll certainly, you know, explore and expound upon why a film is left or right. You know, I think that I owe it to my readers. And that's the lane I am in. It's a pretty empty lane. There aren't many people quite like me, but I've also noticed sort of the ebb and flow of the culture wars in recent years, and I've been happy to see some things changing, like the Daily Wire going Hollywood, and even the Blaze has dipped a toe in that area. But a lot more needs to be done, and I think, you know, we talk about diversity, and often that's a wonderful thing, but how about diversity of opinions and diversity of thought and diversity of art? And I think we often don't really give that much attention, but I think it's very important.
I agree. I appreciate your work and your even-handedness. And I think you do a great job trying to get people interested in culture and to make culture, especially film, look really cool and interesting and engaging. One of the hard lessons that I've learned, because I've been trying to break into, I've basically been moonlighting, but I've been trying to break into entertainment journalism. And coming from a right-of-center background, you know, I'm not so much politically conservative these days, but definitely in my personal life, my cultural life, I am very conservative. And that is a huge handicap trying to break into it. I once had the opportunity to talk with Sonny Bunch, and he told me it's like there is just so little interest on the conservative side of the aisle for anything that approaches intelligent media criticism or critique, because it's pretty much the sites are only ever interested unless they can use it that day as the mallet. We need a mallet today. Oh, look, here's this movie. Let's use that. Which is really unfortunate. Culture is amazing, but I don't think conservative media especially really appreciates it.
Yeah, I listen, Sonny's a very smart guy. I've known him for a while. I mean, just to talk to him now and then and to share some messages. And he does make an interesting point. You know, I often am frustrated by what I see on the right, either the lack of support for right-leaning art, or, you know, the mega donors not willing to open up their wallets to fund a project that might be either right-leaning or just maybe nonconformist. So there's some truth to what he said. And it's funny, just as an outsider looking back at his career, Sonny's career, he simply seems to have pulled back from the culture wars. I think he kind of really just talks more about movies and film and that culture specifically. And I guess maybe in a way he got burned, and I get it, I understand it. I'm not giving up on that yet, but I think those are valid arguments. And you know, I often see people on the right who will say, "I don't watch movies and I hate this." And I think if you completely withdraw from the culture, you lose. You lose even quicker than you are right now. So I don't recommend that path.
That's the flip side of things. Besides that, you know, it just makes people's inner lives, you know, so much less colorful and interesting and impactful, you know, and a personal level, having more culture in your life, especially culture that's nuanced, smart, intelligent, that might provoke emotion out of you, that's so important. But putting that aside, like why we really should be interested in culture, politically, like as strategically, the way that they have handled the culture and the interest in culture has not worked out. I think it's fair to say that. I've seen this firsthand myself, having written some in the past for conservative news sites, and there really isn't an interest in trying to understand why culture is relevant. They sometimes get it, but even then they seem to struggle. I've had more than a few times where I'll work on a cultural piece. There'll be maybe like one editor that likes it, gets it. We get it out there. It does really well. Biggest story of the month, and then nothing. It's like trying to climb up this impossible hill. It's just all covered in Vaseline, and there's like a GOP flag at the top. It's beyond frustrating for people who want to talk about the culture more in a way than just, oh, you know, Trump this, Biden that. You know, I don't understand really how to break into that, but maybe you have some insight on that.
Well, I think it all goes back to story. You tell a great story, and that's going to resonate. That's going to attract people. And I look back just a few weeks ago with Sound of Freedom, the biggest hit of the summer that wasn't named Barbie or Oppenheimer. I mean, to have an independent film that was basically left on the shelf for 5 years, make over $180 million in Trump Indiana Jones and Trump the Mission Impossible series and the Fast and Furious series. I mean, that's a staggering achievement because that story spoke to many people. So I think one of the trickier aspects of this whole conversation is you don't want to make propaganda. You know, there is left-leaning propaganda, and that's ugly, and that's, you know, we don't enjoy that. We see it for what it is, and we discourage it, and we dismiss it. But I don't think you can do that on the right as well. I mean, I think you have to have story first, and then there may be themes baked in that are important that speak to your values. A good example is my friend John Nolte has a new book out called Borrowed Time, and it's not a screed, and it's not a political book, and it's not a story that's, you know, chock-a-block with lectures. But knowing John as I do and knowing his worldview, I can see some of the elements that he explores in the book and how they reflect his values. But again, it's a ripping yarn first and foremost, and that's the best way to go about it. But yeah, I think one of the reasons why I wrote the piece you reference, it was a little bit of tough love in me. I wanted to call out maybe certain platforms who aren't doing all they can. And I did it without naming names, and I will continue to not name names. But, you know, I think certain platforms have the ability to take an artist who might be right-leaning or might be just eccentric or just someone saying something that's not being shared and maybe lift them up a little bit. But if it doesn't have the necessary clicks right away, maybe there's a reticence to do that. And I think we need to get over that. And I think we have to kind of build up artists and give them the support and the nurturing they deserve. Because that's how you get better art, and that's how you get more powerful artists, and that's how you get more people joining the artistic community. But without that, what's the impetus? What's the, do I want to just keep making art and no one sees it, no one cares, and no one writes about it? That'd be pretty frustrating, and I get that.
Definitely. Many of the people that we've spoken to on this show, Culturescape, we've interviewed independent comic creators, independent writers, independent filmmakers. And many of these, not all, but many of these are people who have a more right-wing view of the world and trying to work on the projects they do. They very much feel like they're alone in the wilderness, and they'll have their supporters who subscribe to their Patreon, and maybe they'll have a buddy or two that works in publishing, whatever industry they're trying to break into. But that's as far as it goes. It's endlessly frustrating when I've talked to those people on and off camera, because they see the value of what they're doing. The people engaged with them see it, but there's no interest in conservative media, in news in some ways in general, to engender this with other people. which is very confusing to me, because I think the number one thing I hear out of conservative media besides political stuff is we're in the culture war. It's the most important thing that's ever happened. And my response to that, well, if you're in a culture war, then maybe we should focus some on the culture. But that never seems to go anywhere with anyone.
You know, in an odd way, I think we've made progress on the right just by admitting that, by saying that, by expressing that that is important. Now is the next step. It's creating more artwork. It's supporting more artwork. It's being receptive to it. You know, a couple of years ago, Richard Jewell came out. That was an excellent movie by Clint Eastwood. And, you know, it wasn't marketed to the right, but it had a lot of stories and messaging that was just catnip for us. And I remember I was just on Twitter and social media saying, go see this movie, go support it. A, it's good, and B, you're going to enjoy what's on the screen. And often people say, oh, wait till it comes on home video. And I'm like, no, because if Hollywood sees that movie and sees it tank at the box office, which it did, they're going to say, oh, people don't want to see those kind of movies. So you have to understand the bigger picture here. You have to swallow and say, okay, I may prefer to see it at home in a few weeks. Let me go see it an opening weekend. Let me send a message. Let me use my dollars. And again, it's not a lot of money, just a movie ticket, to send a message. And I think we're seeing that now with Richmond, North of Richmond, Sound of Freedom, try that in a small town. We're seeing some examples where this, for lack of a better phrase, right-leaning art is getting an audience. And I think that's good. And I think that will attract more artists to share these kind of messages. But it has to happen more and more. And people have to connect the dots. It's not just a movie. It's saying something. It's telling Hollywood, hey, there's an audience for this. And that sends a message as well. Now, Hollywood may not respond to it right away. They may reject it, but maybe some independent studios and independent filmmakers and independent comedians will rally to the cause as well. You never know.
Yeah, I definitely have mixed feelings on the Richmond of North of Richmond, but I'm not exactly a country fan, so maybe it's not for me. Part of me is like, well, they did try, so I'll give them credit, but it's still so chunky. It's still so blocky. It lacks a lot of the finesse that you see elsewhere in the media landscape. And if you and they feel like, oh, we can make this a big thing if all at the same time we say the same thing on the same day. That's how it works, right? It gets frustrating to me in some ways, because I'm glad that, you know, it's like, good, you're making an effort. All right, awesome. But there's so much more to it. And that's not really how culture and people engage. But it's hard to break that. Part of the thing with conservatives, I think, that make them a little different than progressives, even libertarians to some degree culturally, is they definitely want to stick to things that are more solid, you know. There are people who are less about standing on sand. And so, you know, they feel that something is worth following if it has a well-established feeling to it, a well-established venue. It's been successful in terms of monetary dollars. And it's hard, though, if you're going to do that, to then try to make this other art, this other culture, big, if you're waiting until it becomes that sure thing. Because as we saw, even with some of the stuff going on with Project Underground Railroad and Tim Ballard and some of all that stuff, which, by the way, some of that news about him and what's going on is legit, but you can definitely feel there is this effort to shoot down this thing that was successful in the mainstream culture that came from the right. And there's a other part of this culture, the people who would rather that we stay in the situation where culture is a left-wing game and that's it. You know, try to destroy that. And that definitely is happening. And it's happened over and over and over again. And it's so hard to get people to think, okay, so let's get in there. Let's engage. You know, we don't even have to get very political about it. Let's just enjoy it and share it and talk about it. That's all you need to do.
Yeah, a couple quick thoughts. One is on the Richmond song, it is imperfect, but it's sung with a lot of heart and a lot of just gravitas to it. And the fact that the message hit the target so well and spoke to a universal frustration, and that's what art can do, even imperfect art. I think that's why it really went viral like it did. And again, this was a literal overnight sensation, so that does matter. It just shows you what can happen if you share an artistic story that resonates. And also, I think the media attacks on Sound of Freedom have been fascinating, and I think what we're seeing is a very steady pattern of the left doesn't want any kind of conservative art at all, even though they dominate the space, even though they maybe have 98 to 99% of the playing field is theirs. They want it to be 100%. And I think when you see something like Sound of Freedom, which was in a way unfairly labeled as conservative and Christian, it's not quite either, really. But it was framed as that, and then the attacks began. It just shows you, stay away. We don't want you here. This is our turf. This is our property. But that also is a tell for they understand how powerful it is and how they can weaponize that. And, you know, in recent days, the return of late night TV is a great example of that. It's just a nonstop message machine against the right for the left with very specific information that is shared in social media and on YouTube and by the press. You know, those are powerful forces that people on the left don't want to cede in any way, shape, or form.
I agree, unfortunately. That seems to be what's happening. It's interesting. Taylor Lorenz just came out with a new book, and there are a lot in there I disagree with, but there's a lot I do agree with. I think one of the things that she does point out, and she does it fairly well, is that there really is a lack of interest to engage or understand how the majority of people now communicate information and engage in digesting information. And even though that they have this on the left, they don't necessarily appreciate the same, and they don't have that kind of curiosity that we would expect. We see it, I think, more. It's more naked on the right, but there are certainly aspects of that throughout news media, which is too bad, because that is the way that people find out about art. It's this important relationship between artists and reporters, and people learn about these art projects because the reporters usually talk about it. So in this important ecosystem, if you decide to remove one of those pieces or you refuse to engage with it, don't be surprised if nothing happens.
Yeah, and that's what the thrust of my piece was. You can have really great right-leaning art or provocative art that doesn't fit the progressive narrative. But if you don't hear about it, then who's going to know about it? There's a new series called Comedy is Murder, and it's from Free the People. They're an organization. They've been around, I think, since 2016, but their newer push into the comedy sketch area is just a few months old. And I watched their videos. I'm thinking, this is good. It's well-produced. It's legitimately funny. It's satirical. It's smart. It's material you would never see on Saturday Night Live or the Colbert late night shows. But then I look at the view count, it's minuscule often. And it's embarrassing almost how small it is, because no one's talking about it. You know, so until they get their own traction going, until they get their own social media machine at work, who's going to know about it? They did a recent clip. It was making fun of the Mother Nature ad that Apple put out recently about how green they are. And it was brilliant. It was making fun of Apple for using child labor. And it was funny. It was sly. It was provocative. It made me go research some of the material in there. And in fact, that's what's going on at Apple. And I thought, why isn't this all over the place? Why didn't this go viral? But, you know, maybe if some of the major conservative platforms pushed it out there, it would go viral. So why don't they? Why aren't they sharing it? Why aren't they celebrating it? Why aren't they using their conservative influencers to push it out there? How wonderful would that be? And then this company would make more and more. They'd have more resources. They'd have more revenue. They'd have more of an ability to put out quicker content, better content, more fascinating content. But none of that happens if no one sees it.
Yes, and it's not just the viewers, it's also investment, that you bring up investors, a critical part of the infrastructure. And you see this in the mainstream media, you know, it'll be this ridiculously tiny outlet or this small magazine, this small operation. And they'll talk about this artist no one has ever heard of, and their project is like documentary about the history of cat collars. But that, as silly as that seems, it's actually a really important part, because that will be seen by other people. In the news, they will share it, and that will be seen also by people who could possibly invest in projects like it or that creator. You know, and it all kind of grows out from that. It's one of the frustrations I've found, and I've had this now twice in job interviews for libertarian and conservative news sites, somehow or another, anime comes up. Now, anime, of course, is not, you're a classic film guy, I get that. But there's this sneering attitude that's like, if you enjoy this stuff, if you engage with it, you know, you aren't welcome to be part of the club. And I think about, you know, you guys have this completely backwards. The number of people who like anime or engage with media hugely dwarfs anything that's going on in the news world. And I think when we do have a big entertainment story breakthrough, even in conservative media, I think that shows that there is a traffic potential there. But for the life of me, I have never been able to, I've only convinced like one or two editors at like an outlet they're willing to work with me. But trying to convince anything more than that, it just goes nowhere. Maybe that's something I'm doing wrong, but I just don't, I don't see that interest. I don't see that curiosity. And that's a great frustration to me. It's kind of part of the reason why I think I do this show, because culture is amazing. It's an incredible thing, how it happens, what it is, what it can give you. It's so much more than how it often gets treated by people these days.
I think this, I do not know much or anything about anime. It's one of my biggest holes in my professional life, and I don't even know where to begin with it, but I think to sneer at it and to say something that's extremely popular is beneath us is wrong. I mean, I've seen a couple of think pieces recently that Taylor Swift is dumb and her music sucks and people who like it suck. And I just thought, wow, that's so short-sighted. Clearly, people love her music. It isn't rich and layered in the way that some great music is. I would put Elvis Costello above her in a heartbeat. But clearly, she's touching a nerve. Clearly, she's speaking to people. And what's wrong with a great pop song that makes you foot tap and that you don't want to see her in concert because she, you know, she belts it out for 3 hours? I just think that's really, listen, it could not be your thing. Taylor Swift is not my jam. It's not the kind of music I like, but I do appreciate some of her stuff. And I have to acknowledge that someone who just put on the biggest tour, maybe the last 30 years, has got something special happening with her art. And to say otherwise is silly. So, yeah, I think the sneering at her, the sneering at anime, it's all wrong. I mean, you could say it's not what I do. I don't have enough knowledge about it. But you better find someone who has the knowledge about it or connect with that audience and see how you could, you know, leverage it or explore it or explain it or, you know, use it to kind of share the stories you want to share. It seems silly otherwise.
I completely agree. I've written for some of the places that decided to go with that last week, and I was like, oh no, this is very ill advice. It was a little painful.
You can have that conversation, and it's perfectly fine. And I like that there's more diversity of thought right now on the right as opposed to the left, which is really in lockstep in so many ways. By the same token, I like I said, I think if you discount Taylor Swift and what she represents and her power and her music and her art, I think you're fooling yourself.
Yep. No, that is going to get you crushed. One of the interesting things you point out, and I like music, but I listen to more like J-pop or classic rock. Music is one of my weaknesses as someone that's interested in pop culture. But you did point out that there are artists that do hit it big. Of course, we already mentioned Oliver Anthony, who did Rich Men North of Richmond.
It doesn't really flow off the tongue, so God bless him for making it work.
you bring up right-leaning rapper Tom McDonald. I've seen this happen a few times, especially during COVID, where there will be someone that breaks out in rap, or it will be something like metal. So not exactly the typical going to church type thing that you would associate with conservatism or traditionalist right-wing people. But that does go very, very far in the culture. And I think that's less because of the politics, but more about the principles there, that they really jive or reverberate with people in a way that goes beyond politics. And that's like a huge superpower. That's a fundamental ability in communicating with humans.
One of the things I've noticed in recent months is that there are a lot of different YouTube stars. I'm thinking about The Quartering, Pop Culture Crisis, Geeks and Gamers. They talk about pop culture in a way that resonates with me on a pretty basic level. But then when I meet them and talk to them, well, you know, what are your politics? They often are less interested in politics directly, or they're nondescript, or they may be libertarian at best. They're not really political beasts, but they speak like me and sound like me and address issues I like. Because I think there's this frustration in the arts where we're getting this very cookie cutter, uniform stories, and people don't want that anymore. They don't want to be lectured. They want free speech. They want creativity. They want something exciting and different and novel. And I think that's building this community of people who may not fall under a label, but I think they exist I think they matter. I think they have really interesting things to say. And I think we shouldn't ignore that huge community, which is, to me, fascinating.
That is a great insight and a good thing to point out. I notice it too. And you're right. They are less political beasts. Sometimes they kind of virtue signal that way, but they're less interested in it. The Quartering, for example, he's left of center, actually, in his own political beliefs. And a lot of them are, you know, this is something that Chris Ferguson, the psychologist and scientific researcher, has pointed out a few times, different studies he's done over there at the University of Stetson, Florida, is that gamers, Gamergate, whatever you want to call these people who are kind of, maybe they're more traditionalist, nerdy people, they tend to be, in their political beliefs, actually very left of center when it comes to things like marriage, sex, you know, welfare policy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But their engagement with culture and to be engaged truly with art, it does require a sort of honesty and a sort of centric view of the world. Like you can engage with it, understand this is coming from a different point of view. And you know, it's like, oh, this is more left center, this is more right of center. You kind of bounce between. I think that's a huge strength. I think that's an advantage that doesn't get appreciated enough or taken advantage of, because I think it could keep people in honest. I think honesty is very important, but I also think it's somewhere that media could try to build from. And maybe that will happen. I don't know. This year, one of the interesting things that has happened is, and no, I'm not putting down people like Matt Walsh or anything like that, but he does have a, you know, I followed Matt Walsh since he was writing op-eds at The Blaze. He kind of does his own thing. He is what he is. But this year, when he was putting out a lot of stuff against video games or anime or certain music, we were seeing a lot of those same YouTubers push back pretty forcefully. And I think that's a positive change. And it shows that people, you're right, they want honest engagement with the culture. They are sick of the politics to some degree. They are definitely sick of, they're definitely sick of how the media, the popular entertainment media has bastardized and just shredded all the entertainment that they once loved. For me, there's a new Doctor Who coming out, and yeah. I am hoping beyond hope it's good, but yeah. At this point, I'm like, no, nothing will ever be good again. And I think a lot of people are like that. We want something fresh. We want something good. A lot of that other stuff doesn't matter so much.
I feel personally, my view of pop culture and the culture wars is I want the biggest tent possible. We need a lot of people on what I would call my side, our side. And by our side, I it's more, it could be center left to hard right. It could be a lot of different shades of gray, but it's about freedom. It's about free speech. It's about being able to tell the stories you want to tell. I wrote a book called Virtue Bombs all about this, and all about the suppression of free speech, the suppression of creativity. So if you go to Hollywood and Toto, my site, or even my podcast, it's all about people like Bill Maher and Rob Schneider and John Cleese. They're all left of center. And I celebrate them because they're for free speech. They are for free creativity. And so many in Hollywood are either scared to death to say the same, or they're actually actively against it. And, you know, so, you know, when you see a Stephen Colbert yucking it up that Dr. Seuss books are getting banned, it's not a good place to be, and that's the mainstream. And the mainstream is often against free speech at this point in our culture, and it's shocking to me, but it is what it is. And with having a big tent where all these different philosophies, you know, bang around and knock around and fight and skirmish, and but at the end of the day, we go out and have a beer together, I'm all for it. I appreciate Matt Walsh so much for being, he is so brave, I can't even describe it. And yet on a lot of pretty big issues, I would disagree with him vehemently, but I applaud what he does and his strength and his ability to speak his mind and put his neck out there, because I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do what he does in certain ways. I've got a family. He does too, but he's willing to go there. So I give him a lot of credit, even though we'd probably fight over a whole bunch of issues, but it takes a lot of courage to be out in the culture right now, that's for sure.
There, it definitely does. It's really strange how people who work in culture, whether that's comic books, whether that's novels or movies, or they work on TV or something like crazy obscure, like they work on like super specific retro 1960s shows people have never heard of, audio productions, you know, it just really, really obscure stuff, and how all of that has become so controlled, and there's so much push to get rid of people, not even if they put out work that's different, but just knowing that they possibly might. And you see that all over the place. You mentioned the piece Andrew Klavan, who I have tremendous respect for as a film writer. He is a huge talent, and he's worked on so many big things over his career, but he has almost been totally unpersoned from Hollywood because he is right of center. But it's not just him. Chuck Dixon in comics, and you know Chuck, he wasn't doing like a bunch of a right-wing, you know, he's not Mike Barone. He's not putting out a bunch of right-wing diatribes in his issues. But he was the guy, of course, for those unfamiliar, Chuck Dixon. We've had him on the show. He wrote most of the big stories in the 90s for Batman 2000s. He worked on like basically every DC book at some point. He was very successful, and they kind of just pushed him out when all this political stuff started happening, and they had to get rid of the people who might be conservative. And it's a complete sea change. And he never, though, was the super political guy. You know, when we talked with him, he made this point. He's like, when we worked on projects together, like there was the character of Spoiler, who is a love interest for Tim Drake Robin. And there was discussion about the topic of abortion and some of the things that go around that. And it was very even-handed. He said, I was never told that I had to think or go a specific way. And we would challenge each other. And what we, you know, then what we would put out would be very fair. I think that's what people expect. But somehow what's happened in culture is the people who are in control, either they like it or they're scared into doing it. And so we see things, even super crazy niche things, like maybe they're into like videos of squirrels swimming. I don't know. There's going to be some stupid culture war thing where the right wing guy or gal gets pushed out. And it's like, you guys have like an audience of 10 people. Well, great. Now it's down to 5. It's such a zany thing that's happening in this cultural moment, but we see it all over the place. And it seems like almost in everything. And it's just endlessly frustrating.
Because of what I do, and because I've been doing this for a while now, I've spoken to a lot of different artists who are just almost deathly afraid of being exposed as a conservative, of having their views out in the public. And it's a horrible way to live, and it's a horrible thing, because at the end of the day, George Clooney can say anything he wants about politics, and that's the way it should be. And he could be as left of center, and he can promote as many Democrats as he can, and I have no problem with that. God bless him. It's ain't that America. And yet, look at Kevin Sorbo. You know, I've spoken to him multiple times. I've met him in the past, a very nice fellow, a very regular guy. And he basically lost his Hollywood career because he's a Christian conservative. And I'm thinking, okay, what did he do? Did he harass a woman on set? Did he slam a co-star with homophobic insults? Where's the crime? There is no crime that I'm aware of. I don't think there's anything. And I've spoken about this. You know, I work with gay people. I work with people, different backgrounds and attitudes. Let's put on a movie. Let's put on a TV show. But his views became untenable, the views he has essentially off screen. And I mean, the fact that there's not more outrage about that, there's a literal blacklist going on in Hollywood now, you know, not the 50s one, the new improved. It's stunning to me. And it just says where we are. But again, this speaks to my original point, is that for the Kevin Sorbos of the world to survive, they need someone like me reviewing their movies and interviewing them and other, you know, bigger platforms than I have doing the same and giving them attention. And then maybe the next wave of Kevin Sorbos, they deserve that attention as well. But we're often not seeing that. So if Kevin Sorbo basically gets un-Hollywooded, for lack of a better phrase, and then he's out in the wilderness. He's just making movies on these small, small budgets. And he needs people like you and I to kind of go out there and say, okay, we're going to give him some coverage. We're going to talk about his movie so people know about it. And without that, what else has he got? I mean, he's only one person. So
it is awful, and people don't like it. They go along with this kind of stuff, but they do not care for it when it happens to them. I've had this frustration now because of the economy, because of what's happened with the social media companies cutting traffic off to news sites. Everything going on with Google, where they just want to drain all the information from articles and put all the information up so people never click through. Because everything that's happening, especially even the economy and inflation, freelance work has gone much harder in the last 2 months. Getting pitches out, landing them, getting things published has just, it is monumentally more difficult than it was previously. And it makes me feel like some of these concerns are not getting better. I've seen a fair amount of censorship, even in my own life, you know, applying for jobs, trying to get gigs, working with people. And there is this notion in the mainstream, in the media, that if you ever were right of center, if you're particularly religious, if you somehow don't fit into the very tiny donkey-shaped cookie cutter, then you should not be let in. You should be pushed out. You should feel ashamed of yourself. I've gotten things where I've worked with outlets. This is something I'm still kind of recovering from a little bit last year, and then I tried again because they came back and wanted me to try again, where I have a friend who I'd worked with, very, very successful, major American magazine. We get in the process. It goes great. I'm talking with the guy. It goes back and forth. We do a lot of interviews. Awesome. Working wonderful. And they get to that last stage. I don't hear back from them for a week. They get back to me and they're like, oh, I'm you know, you're out. And there's kind of this attitude like, I'm so sorry we ever even engaged with you because you're such a terrible person. And I'm flummoxed because I haven't done anything wrong. You know, I'm not particularly political, but that doesn't matter. And it's in this environment that conservative media, which could be, you know, the alternative, or at least provide a competition, so it'd be more encouraging to get a wider spectrum of political beliefs. This is when they decide they don't want to be interested in culture. It just makes me pull my hair out because I'm like, come on, guys.
Yeah, I just did an interview with someone for the Hollywood and Toto podcast. They're the creative team they've been working behind the scenes to bring back this movie called We the Living. It's based on Ayn Rand's first novel. Came out in the early 1940s. There's a great backstory behind it, but how it came to be, how it was censored, how it was almost destroyed, how they brought it back and everything. And I talked to them about, you know, they're screening it now in different parts of the country. And that when they go to film festivals or they go to film groups or they go to theaters or they go to any of these bodies and they show the film and they talk about the film and they explore it and they're all excited and it's very positive, very this, very that. As soon as they realize it's an Ayn Rand novel that it's based on, they shut down and they go away and they can't even go there. And I'm just, it's so fascinating because she's become this demonic figure. You know, she is who she was who she is, or whatever you can say. I'm saying that badly. You know, she has a philosophy. She's made some powerful stories. Why can't we celebrate that? Why can't we discuss that? Why can't we explore that? But just that Ayn Rand brand alone is punishing them on many levels. And we see that across the board. You just have to have a very specific point of view. And I, you know, I've written about this in the past. It's Hollywood, in that Hollywood is based on fear. It's fear of getting older, fear of not getting the next great script, fear of a younger, better-looking person coming in the ranks behind you, fear of box office failure. It's all built on fear. And so you add in the woke mindset, it ramps it up by 10, and then you don't want to rock the boat. You want to say exactly what you need to say, and you don't want to have different opinions. You want to have the same opinions. And it's creating this really stultifying atmosphere, which is no good for anything.
Agree. It's crazy. I've had this happen too many times where it's like you engage with something with someone that might be, you know, left more left than you. You engage with the left wing person, organization, whatever. And at first they're really into it. And they're like, oh, this is so cool. I love talking to you. This is great. Awesome. And then you can almost hear the tick of the clock. Click, 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 click. Oh, they're conservative.
Yeah. And yet I don't think you or I would do that. I know I wouldn't.
No, never.
And the actors I speak to, the Kevin Sorbos of the world, Dean Cain too, I've chatted with him. Whenever they talk about their fellow artists who are left of center, they don't care at all. Let's put on a movie. Let's collaborate. Let's work together to make the best product possible. That's all they care about. Nick Searcy as well. I throw him in that category. They're professionals. They just want to work. And, you know, listen, you can't even be in Hollywood and be right of center without being surrounded by people who are left of center. And who cares? You know, let's just make the product. Let's work together. You can debate things off screen if you want to or not, probably better not, and just go home at the end of the day. What's wrong with that? But that's not the way the industry thinks. It's a very suppressive environment, and it's scary.
Hollywood has it extremely good because they can engage in that and it will not destroy their industry. But in nerd culture, we've had this happen now several times, especially in Western comics, and it has destroyed that industry. It has not survived that political hewing of the what was there. And I see it in other places, you know, some tabletop games. I see it in some smaller niche parts of gaming. I think it's tremendously unhelpful, and I think it's very unhealthy overall, because I think it just tells people don't engage, don't think about, don't engage with it. I don't know if you saw this. I don't know how interested you are in comics, Christian, but Alan Moore, who he looks like a crazy person, by the way. He always has. He's like a beard that's like 4 feet, 5 feet long, I swear. He was saying, you know, the saddest thing about me is I no longer think about comics. Now, this is the guy that made Watchmen. He made Batman, Dark Knight. He's worked in Year One, just like a ton of really iconic work that sold really, really well. And this guy's saying he doesn't think about comics anymore. He doesn't engage with them. He doesn't care about. And that's what's going to happen. That's what happens to culture when you are cleaving it, you're pushed away. It's not that people get really toxic and then they want to control it and it gets all heated. No, the worst thing than the heat death is the apathy, and they just don't care anymore. And it dies off and we walk away, which me as someone who loves culture, I enjoy politics, news, et cetera, but culture is really what makes me happy. That is just so terrible. That's a tragedy to me, but it is what happens. And it is still to be seen if these industries, somehow we get people who want to be normal again. I think I'm starting to see this a little bit at the big two in comics. Can it be resuscitated? And we don't know yet the answer to that question, because it may not.
You know, one of the things I've noticed is that when a particular project gets successful or has some momentum, then the people behind the scenes think, okay, now we can use this as a messaging machine. I'll give you two examples. There was a show on Netflix a few years back called Atypical. It was about a student with autism and about his, you know, trials and tribulations. It was a beautiful story, three really good seasons, smart, funny, beautifully acted. And then the fourth season got very political. They talked about sort of gender rights and climate change. And it just so happened that the season was the worst of the four. And I thought, oh, that's too bad. Like it's almost like they hear so much about the messaging that they forget about the creative drive. Another example is I've watched the first two seasons of The Morning Show with Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston. I thought it's a really good show, a little bit of a potboiler, but I thought it was very balanced. They bring up some issues like abortion or media bias or the Me Too movement, and it was very layered and interesting and not just a lecture, but the Me Too storyline in and of itself was just beautiful because they were heroes, they were villains, they were shades of gray, they were things you think were right, but then you were not so sure about it. It was just a nice presentation. And they even mocked a little bit of the woke bylaws in a sense. And I just started watching the third season. And the first episode right away, I'm thinking, oh, this show's changed. Very lecture filled, little hints here and there, little things. A very, let's, you know, the media is, you know, journalism is so powerful. We have to speak truth to power. And I'm like, I'm out. And I'll probably watch a couple more episodes, but I'm just like, oh, they gave in. You know, they wanted to make this very good show into a soapbox. And conversely, I didn't find the episode entertaining even, you know, give or take those arguments I could agree with, disagree with. So I find that very frustrating. And again, that's that woke thing where when you put the message first, the art often trails behind it. Then you have the apathy. Then you have people like Alan Moore, whose entire life has been in comics, where they don't care. Because what's the care about? I mean, I'll watch Captain America Civil War 1,000 times, and I'll watch the Infinity War movie 1,000 times. In the last 8 MCU movies, I've seen them once. I have no interest in seeing them again. But they're woke and they're diverse. Good. Who cares?
Well put. That's kind of how I feel about it too. It's like, it's one thing if they're lecturing me. It's another if it's unintelligent. That's kind of what happened with Doctor Who was like during the Capaldi era, they started to get really hard into current day politics, which was annoying sometimes, but you know, there was still pretty good acting. The stories were interesting and there was good writing for the most part. And then it flipped over to what we had with Whitaker and Chibnall. And now that's where the intelligence had died. Like the brain is dead. There's it's just completely vapid. It's just lectures. There's nothing else here. And it was so sad for me because from that, and this is something I think one day when we get past this, maybe people will try to examine. But it's like when you drop a stone into a pond and it kind of ripples out, because then it was like this came in, it destroyed the show, and then all the stuff that had built up around Doctor Who, all these fantastic audio dramas, these books, the comics, all of them started to get taken down with it. Like the sinking ship just pulled them all out. And for me, that had been super into Doctor Who, still am. It was just so depressing because it was like, what happened? It was all okay just a second ago, and now it's gone.
I mean, look at the MCU, ain't what it used to be. Indiana Jones is dead as a franchise. The Pixar movies don't record big box office numbers like they used to. Star Trek seems to be floundering. They can't even get a new Star Trek movie off the ground. Star Wars, I mean, I know people still care. I don't care. I is my beloved franchise forever until The Last Jedi, but there's a lot of people who are just done with that whole landscape. You know, these are a lot of beloved franchises and IPs that are just gone now. Terminator, you could say as well. That's a lot, and it happened in a pretty short time, and it's not all woke, but it does play a part. And it's also this, we need to kind of scrap the past to rebuild the future, and we have to deny things, and I don't know, it's just wrong. And circling back to a previous point, one of my favorite movies from, I guess, the 90s was Dead Man Walking, and it was about the death penalty. And I thought, Tim Robbins wrote and directed or directed it. It's a great film. And I'm pretty sure he is an anti-death penalty person. And I think the movie was made to be an anti-death penalty statement. But I thought it was so layered and so rich and so powerful that I think no matter where you come from on that issue, you could take something from it and appreciate it and applaud it and be entertained by it. I think that's often the best art, where it's so, you could enter it at any different point and come away with different conclusions, because the storyteller is not there to send a lesson or send a message. He just wants to tell a story. I think that's a great early example of what they don't do as much today.
Definitely. It is interesting. I get tired of the talking points of wokeness and the term prize. The meaning has very much been washed away.
Yeah.
But one of the things you do notice that happens with wokeness is when it starts happening, the wokening, it seems to take a lot of things with it. And all of a sudden it's like just the intelligence level. And that was kind of a little bit I talked about in my last comment. It's just not good. It's less engaging. You know, if Star Trek Discovery season, you know, all of it, I was going to say seasons, but no, it's all terrible. If it had been, you know, super in your face lecturing you, but it was still a good show, I think it wouldn't have been the prom that it was. But that's always what happens. It isn't just that it suddenly got political. It suddenly got mad. And I find that so, so very interesting. Now, to the flip side of this, and I'm curious to hear what you think on this. And if you're going to take a pass, that's cool. Fine, whatever. There's been a lot of stuff going on, I think, with comics, gay or independent comics, where people are asking to more critically evaluate, which, by the way, I think is healthy. An example is Eric July's Isom. Some of the engagement with that is negative, isn't totally honest, but a lot is. And I like seeing that there's this back and forth. Ethan Van Sciver, we've had on the show, EVS, who did Cyberfrog, worked at DC forever. Big comic book artist. He made this point, was like, he's really glad people were buying these independent comics and were interested. But he said that wasn't enough. You know, after you buy the book, you have to take it out of the wrapper and you have to read it. And so we're finally starting to see that, but it's still really slow. And so I wonder how long it will be. Maybe you have some sense of the time frame till we can get people to not only start to show interest or want to support art that might be in the center or right of center, but also to engage with it. Because I think that's kind of like the critical last piece that makes art thrive. I still don't quite see how that would happen. I think it will, but I just don't understand the timing on it.
Well, I think one of the things in our collective favor is that technological advances are making it easier for an Eric July to even exist, to be successful, to be to work outside the system and to draw a crowd. So I think that will produce more and more content, and that's a good first step. I think that generally speaking, culture changes slowly, but I think in the last 10, 15 years, it's gotten much quicker. For me, I used to have a newspaper in my hand. I mean, I could read it on my phone, but I wanted that newspaper in my hand. And then it seemed like in a blink of an eye, I'm like, I don't want that in my hand. Why would I want that? I think that we're adapting new patterns. We're accepting new norms much quicker than usual. So I think that the people on the right getting more engaged with art, I think will happen faster too. But it could still be a 10-year process, if not more. But again, it's up to the storytellers. It's up to the people who are fashioning these yarns to engage us and to give us something that we don't see in the mainstream. And that's where it is. You know, I really focus a lot on comedy these days. I speak to a lot of comedians and I follow their work. And I think they're so smart and so cutting edge and so interesting and so thought provoking. And I think, you know, that's one of the easiest platforms. You don't need to tell a joke. You just need a microphone. That's about it. Put it up on YouTube, have a podcast, and you're good to go. But I see the growth in that space. You know, I you watch late night TV, you watch Saturday Night Live, it's like, ah. And then you watch Ryan Long or Tyler Fisher or Chrissy Mayer or Danny Polishek or all these different creators who are so interesting, so smart, so good, and so unique, and their voices are so profound. And I think I'd rather watch this than anyone on SNL. Or anyone, any Colbert late night talk show. So I think there's more and more culture artists coming out there. I think they're braving this new world. I think they're speaking their minds in ways that matter. And I just hope that the rise of censorship doesn't swarm them, because that's always still very possible.
I hope not. You know, I think what we saw this year with Hogwarts Legacy, that there was this attempt to really squash it, but people said no to that. They said, no thanks, we don't like it, go away. And that made me happy, because it was like fine, if you have prisons, it's fine, but don't just try to destroy it because you disagree with it. And that people had no time or patience for that across the spectrum made me very happy to see. And I hope we see more of that, where people are like, no, I'm not, this is pointless trolling, go away. I want more of that. And I think it will happen. It just might take some time.
Yeah. And, you know, Netflix standing up for Dave Chappelle a year or two ago was a huge cultural moment, because they very easily could have just thrown him under the bus, said, we're going to remove that controversial special. We're not going to make any more projects with Dave Chappelle. We're out of this Dave Chappelle business. That would have had an absolutely chilling effect on comedy in general, and probably free speech too. But they basically told their employees, if you don't like Dave Chappelle's stuff on our network, pound sand. I mean, they didn't say it exactly, but boy, they came awful close. And that was a powerful moment. And again, I always feel like that for every two steps forward, there's at least one step back. And that's just where we are right now.
Fair. What do you think is going to happen to entertainment media? I've talked to a lot of people who work in entertainment journalists, because I foolishly keep trying to work in it a little bit. I mean, this is really dumb. Like, there's no money in doing this whatsoever. What do you think is going to happen to it? Right now, it's kind of in a rocky place where pretty much the only people who are making it seem to be very big stars, and there's just not much room for anyone else. Do you think things are going to get better? Do you think it's going to get killed off and replaced just with the influencers on YouTube? Which, I mean, has negatives and pluses to that. There's some things they do better, but we would lose some reporting, some objectivity with that. Do you think there is a way forward for entertainment journalism, whether it's right wing or mainstream, or are you more another doom and gloomer like myself?
You know, I think there's still a place for mainstream, straightforward, entertainment journalism. I think it's more crowded if you're talking about left-leaning journalism, which is the vast majority. You know, the reason why I've been able to carve out a career is because I'm unique. There just aren't that many people like me, and I'm speaking to half the country. So I think when you have all these different entertainment platforms, whether it's, you know, Collider or The Hollywood Reporter or Deadline or The Wrap or Variety, if they're doing variations of the same theme and with the same particular bias, yeah, they may struggle. Absolutely. I think that seems inevitable. And also, you have a lot of artists out there or writers who seem like they're doing it as a labor of love, and they're just sharing stories and articles and updates and things. So that's competition against them as well. So we shall see. You know, on a personal level, my website has ads, and I think they're clean. I think they're helpful as far as not being obtrusive. But I read some websites that, you know, for my sports, I'm a Yankees fan. And when I read those websites, the pop-ups are brutal. Sometimes it'll force me to skip to the front of the story, even though I just started reading it and I'm toward the bottom. So I understand there's a lot of pressure on all these different outlets to make money, to make things, you know, make ends meet. But it's difficult. At some point, they'll be chasing away their audience too. So it's a weird landscape. But we'll have to see. I mean, the bottom line is I think we still want to have entertainment news. We're still curious about it. We still want to read movie reviews. And I think everyone's going to maybe have to up their game a little bit to stay alive.
I think so. I hope so. I really do enjoy culture. I really love that kind of world of reporting and talking about and interviewing, meeting people. It would make me sad if it went away. Do you see any positives on the horizon? There's been a lot of change in the landscape, especially when it comes to places like Rotten Tomatoes or Metacritic. You see any positives coming into this in our future? Because I know I focus a lot on the negative. It's just my personality.
You know, I mean, I feel like as the cable model dies away, the streaming model benefits the consumer in a more aggressive way. You know, with cable, as my friend John Nolte often says, there are six channels you want, and then there's 100 you don't pay for. You don't want, but you pay for anyway. So I think streaming is more of a democratic process. Unless they start bundling things together, then it might get cable-like again. I just think the lowering of the tech window, where anyone could be a filmmaker, anyone can be a podcaster, anyone could be a stand-up comedian in a way if they have the talent, I think that's exciting and bold. And I think we're seeing really a strong number of people gravitating to these forces. That encourages me. I think that the forces out there trying to censor us, whether it's political speech, artistic speech, I've got to think there's something in the American DNA that's going to fight back against that. And on my darkest days, I think that's not true, but I still hope that there's enough of that all-American pluck to fight back against that. So that's a positive potential thing. And I think at the end of the day, there are so many different outlets competing for our attention, creating stories that they want us to watch, that competition often makes for better art as well. You know, I think when The Sopranos came to be years ago, all the other networks said, oh bleep, we gotta do better to compete with shows like that. So I think that kind of competition is healthy and will result in better art, hopefully. And also the fact that the streamers are suffering financially and the studios are suffering with this economy, maybe they'll stop alienating so many people and think about how do we better reach the average ordinary consumer and do so in a way that doesn't insult him or her. And maybe that'll be that slice of humble pie will help all of us. So we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. I was watching last night with my mom, checking on her, you know, watching TV. And she was watching, what do we watch? Star Trek New Worlds. And this is one of those kind of attempts. It seems like the entertainment companies are slowly beginning to realize that people aren't interested in this just awful, unintelligent political stuff. And yeah, we're seeing that, I think, a little bit with Star Wars. But Star Wars is turning much slower, and we'll have to see what happens there, because KK has her iron grip, the evil queen KK, Kathleen Kennedy. And I don't know if it's going to happen or not. But I do think that there is interest in changing things. There is interest in good. And you would have to hope that when they see the numbers and they see Strange New World or Picard season, yeah, that's it, Strange New World or Picard season 3, when they are, you know, shooting off, doing great in the what we used to call ratings, and then, you know, Discovery season 3 is down the dumps. I hope, you know, you would hope that would send a clear signal to these companies that maybe they aren't big fans of a lot of their consumer base, but they do like money. And you would hope, come on, you see it? That's what we want. Give us more than that, guys. But I don't.
Well, you know, I've been using this term lately. It's show business with an asterisk, because look at late night TV. Before Gutfeld, there was no right-leaning late night show, none. And then Gutfeld comes around, and within 8 seconds, he's the number one, number two show on late night. That's a message saying, and this is no attack on Gutfeld, he's a funny guy, but half the country is so starved for a late night show that speaks to them that they made it an almost overnight hit. So why wouldn't a Netflix or a Hulu or an Amazon or even just one of the major networks put out a right-leaning late night show and get some of that money? But they'd rather leave it on the table, because at times, Hollywood cares more about the messaging than the dollar. And if they're making enough money elsewhere, then they can do that. You know, so I mean, all these different late night shows are basically carving up elements of the left. And if they went more broad, they would make more money, but they don't seem to want to. They seem to be happy with the lane they're in. And I think that's why the show business, they just want to make money. It's not exactly true, but as the economy contracts and as they start to lose more and more cash, then they won't have the wiggle room to speak to their principals. They'll want to just make some money. And that may change things as well.
Yeah, I think we're seeing with Netflix, we're seeing more discipline. I look at the difference between the Cowboy Bebop Netflix show, which is an abomination that should be erased from time and history, and One Piece, which is a much more faithful adaptation that actually had the creator of One Piece as a major part of the production. And that difference is night and day. And the big difference here is, of course, respect to the material. And it feels like Netflix, you know, when they're feeling squeezed for the dollars, they're more likely to tell, you know, whatever writer or busybodies in their company, shut up.
Yeah.
Go away. We don't want you. They don't want you. Go away. And it needs to happen, as unkind as that necessarily sounds.
Well, you know, and Netflix, after the Dave Chappelle incident, who do they sign up next? Well, not immediately next, but enough next, was Ricky Gervais, who did a special, I think it was
Excellent.
Transhuman, maybe? Something similar to that, that took the trans jokes and like doubled and tripled down on them. And then more recently, they've had on Shane Gillis, who was canceled by Saturday Night Live. And they had on Mark Norman, who's not exactly a mainstream kind of cat. And then I think last year they had a Tim Dillon comedy special. So they've been being a little edgier, kind of embracing some of the folks on the rebellious side. And I think Netflix is suffering less than other streaming platforms.
Let's hope everyone takes the correct lessons. We're going to get wind up because I know you are a very busy man, but I wanted to hear what you think on the writer's strike, because I get a lot of different opinions from people. But you actually have talked to people that are writers, producers, directors, people who actually work in Hollywood and I do talk to some people, but I mean, most of us were just kind of making it up as we go and are probably a bunch of liars. What do you think is actually happening with the writer's strike? My friend, sometimes a coworker, Neon at Clownfish TV, wonderful man, love him and his wife very much. He's made the point that the strikes, that he feels that the strikes were really just a way so that these companies could wash away all these terrible projects they had signed on for. And that, too, that this was a way to appease people while they build up their AI machine. Is that an accurate look at it? Do you think the writers actually won out here? I mean, they're smarmy as heck. Like, I think everyone can agree. They just get on our nerves. They're always, it's just like, go away. I don't care. But that, you know, I'm a curmudgeon. What do you think is going on with the writer's strike?
It's tricky to know from the outside. I can say some things. It sounds like they were able to get more writers in the writer's room per show in certain cases, which I think is not a good idea, because I think a show can be beautifully written by one person or six. And I don't think there should be some sort of hard and fast rule. So I think there may be some sort of, you know, checkbox going on there where they have six writers, maybe four of them are doing all the heavy lifting. It sounds like they're getting better residuals. And when a show does take off, they get more pieces of the pie, which I think is a fair thing. They claim that there's been some AI protections in place. I don't necessarily buy that. I do think that if the studios can save money by doing something with AI, they will do something with AI. I think that's maybe inevitable. You know, but generally speaking, I have sympathy for the writers because, you know, when you talk about the actors, there's lots of unknown actors. There's lots of starving actors, but there's lots of Clooney's and Hanks's and Denzel's and, you know, the people making a ton of money. When it comes to the writers, I mean, there are a handful of showrunners who do very well, but I think more of them are more, I don't know if blue collar is the right word, but, you know, working hard, not getting recognition, not getting the money. So, you know, I don't have a problem with that. I think to really address this issue, though, we'd have to kind of open the books entirely and really have someone scour over what's being made, how much is being made, what's losing money, what's gaining money. I don't know. And I think until we have that kind of transparency, I think there'll be a lot of questions. And from what I understand, I think that some of the creators may get access to some of the ratings figures, but I still think we won't, which makes it very frustrating as a film critic, by the way, or an analyst to say, okay, is the new Star Wars show, is it good? Is it bad? Is it getting an audience? Well, this website says it is, and this website says, no, it's not. Well, what's the truth? So that's frustrating on multiple levels. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the bottom line is they've got to write more stories that are more attuned with the universality among us. And I think that they often do that. I get a lot of email pitches from indie studios, and it's always these really quirky, arcane, sub-genre stories. I'm thinking, I don't know who that appeals to. I mean, there's nothing wrong with those stories, but you think if you want to make more money, you'd have more universal stories, but who am I?
Yeah, I get a few of those emails. I always wonder, have you looked up anything on Google PR people? With the stuff on the thing, the two things that Neon noticed, and he makes a good observation on, the AI stuff is really weird because it feels like the protections are... there are some protections for writers. However, the caveat is, especially for actors, it feels like there's not a lot of protections there. And there is that concern, you know, people have that, like, they're going to basically just copy someone's likeness, and that's what's going to happen in the future. And we just won't have as many normal, real-blooded actors. I do share some of those concerns, some.
I don't know. I mean, it's... I don't think we can even grasp what technology will be like in 10 or 15 years. Everything's moving so quickly. I just watched the Indiana Jones movie. I thought it was mediocre, but boy, I thought they de-aged Harrison Ford pretty darn well. I thought it was almost seamless to watch it. That just gets better every year. So, you know, what happens next? And will Tom Cruise, as he enters his mid-60s, think, I want to get nipped and tucked and keep acting, but I want
make another deal with Cthulhu.
Yeah, have my screen image look like me in my 40s and 50s as opposed to me at age 61. So we'll have to see how that pans out as well. But yeah, I don't know, man. Crystal ball wise with technology, I think it's a fool's errand to know what's going to happen in 10 years, if not maybe even less.
That is very fair. Another thing I heard was interesting was the part of the deal for the writers is that they would be given the numbers by the streamers. And that makes me feel like, one, that's eventually going to be leaked. Like, it always gets leaked. It's like a sieve there. Two, maybe that is something that will happen in our future, where we will finally get honest and real analytics for what actually is doing. Instead of these companies that, like, do these crazy, it's like these crazy, complicated math where they like take a percentage of people who are on social media and they look at like which dailies cover this and you're like, is any of this even real? So that would be awesome. I think that would help things.
Yeah, and we deserve that transparency. And you know, I often wonder with some of these woke TV shows and movies, are they really successful? Did a lot of people truly watch Velma on Max, or was that something that they want to cling to because they like Mindy Kaling, or they're just gonna fighting the trolls who they think are evil and wrong for not liking the show? I don't know.
Well, that will be fascinating. Well, Christian, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on. I always enjoy your work. You're a fascinating guy. You're a very smart writer. And whenever I read your stuff, I learned about projects I wasn't really aware of. But when you cover projects I already kind of know about, I always find something that you bring new insight to the table. So it's a treat to talk with you today. Tell our viewers and listeners, what's the media you are consuming and where can people find you?
Gosh, I watch too much YouTube, which is a terrible thing because it's such an unfree speech platform, but I've been addicted to cooking shows lately, which is pretty sad. It is what it is. But it's funny. I grew up watching TV 24/7. Now I almost never watch TV. It's all streaming, but people can find out more about me. My podcast is the Hollywood in Toto podcast. I have a lot of interesting guests, people who have been canceled, people exposing cancel culture, or just artists who have a new and different vision that I think people will be excited about. So hope people check that out. And my website is hollywoodintoto.com.
Excellent. Well, all of you, if you like Culturescape, and you should definitely check out Christian Toto's podcast. And we're going to end the show here today, guys. This program was helped put together with the assistance of Young Voices, a journalism organization, and Bain Books Publishing. My editor, who makes me look way, way more competent than I actually am, Chris Hollywicki, thank you so much for doing that. And to all of you for taking the time to listen and watch this, you know, all your comments, all that stuff. I get a lot of DMs from you guys, not enough YouTube comments, but I get DMs, and I love all that stuff, so keep sending it. And until next time, my friends, keep geeking out.